Blog Talk Radio.
Right, wrong, and wellness.
Itself. Please use discretion when tuning in. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. How are you? How are you? Greetings and welcome to Truthful Tuesdays right here on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. I am Sandy Rogers, and it is my honor and pleasure to be your host of tonight's show. You know, I get so excited every week on Tuesday nights because I am just simply blessed with the world's best ever guest that takes time out of their busy schedule to come and present their expertise to you here on the show. And so tonight is no different, and I'm so excited that I get to bring on the air a very dear friend of mine. I may be introducing her to some and just reacquainting with others. So stay tuned. Just hang in there. But before we get to that, you know, there's always a couple of things that we need to do around here. So the very first thing that we do on a daily basis, but particularly on Tuesdays, is to take time out and give thanks and honor to our ancestors. Our ancestors have us, and all we have to do is call upon them for their assistance. They can't butt in, but they can show up as we call in and we ask for their assistance, for their ear, for their advice, for their way. And because we stand on the strength of our ancestors, we can walk around in such a more relaxed, confident manner, knowing that they got us. You know what I'm saying? Like, they got our tops, our bottoms, our fronts, and our backs, and we're just ever thankful to the ancestors, especially as we talk about topics here on Life, Love, and Wellness that goes beyond the comfort zone of most people. And so because we have that courage and that tenacity, just beaming from our ancestors on Tuesday night, you know, we do it in a fearlessness. And so, ancestors, we thank you, we thank you, we thank you, we love you. Ashe. And next we do what I like to call affirmative positive reading. And it comes actually from my daily blog that you can find at revsandy.wordpress.com. And, you know, I've been doing just a small portion of the daily blog, but I actually want to do this whole blog for today. And you'll understand as Ama Kiasu comes on with her presentation, you'll understand why it's important for me to read the full blog. And the title of this is What God Goddess Has for You. What God Goddess has for you is beyond your wildest imagination. You cannot fathom the richness, the prosperity, the abundance that awaits you. God Goddess created the storehouse of plenty. The Creator said you can have everything that you desire. The source of all creation is simply waiting for you to make your request known. Wow. You must be and remain open and receptive to the good that is yours. Never allow thoughts or words to contradict your acceptance of blessings. Trust that it is yours. Watch God, Goddess, show out in your life. The blessings will begin to flood your life in every area. Pray constantly with thanksgiving. Thank God, Goddess, for every detail of your present situation. Give thanks for mercy and grace. Thank God, Goddess, for life. Let thanksgiving be your constant prayer. Meditate on the goodness of God, Goddess, your life and all humanity. Surround loved ones in your meditation with perfect health and wholeness. Send those healing energy vibrations out into the universe. Be prepared to receive. Eliminate all negative thoughts and words from you. Permit only thoughts and words of abundance, life, health, and prosperity to linger in you. Saturate yourself in loving thoughts and actions. Yes, you are worthy and deserving of the best. You must believe this, and as you allow yourself to trust, watch it appear abundantly in your life. It is that easy. The source seeks to bless you beyond your wildest imagination. Be ready to receive it. God, Goddess, is, therefore you are. And again, you can find that at revsandy.wordpress.com. It's all about life. It's all about love. And it's all about wellness. So tonight's show is titled Along the Way, Healing Happens. We have the honor and the pleasure of author Amakiyasu Turbin House to be our guest tonight. She has written a masterpiece called Buried Treasure, Unearth Your Golden Soul. And she's going to explain to us the state of life that she was in when she began creating this book and the reason why it's so important and why that title, Healing Happened Along the Way, you know. And so there's a secret to all of that. And I don't want to get, you know, I keep trying to pull myself back. So audience, you know, you're always welcome to join in the discussion. All comments are welcome, and it's our intention that every voice is heard that wish to be heard. So our call-in number is 516-531-9819, and you would have to call in. You cannot do this on one of or on any other type of device but a phone, and then you would just simply press 1 to let us know you want to speak live on air with us. Now, once your phone line is open, I will not, unless there's too much noise, go back and disrupt you from being able to join live in on the conversation. But I would ask that you mute your phone because a lot of our listeners like to listen to the shows over and over again, and we wish to honor that by making sure that we have the best sound quality available for them to do that. And if you ever want to listen to any of the shows, including tonight, you can do that by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/Sandy Rogers, and that's SandyRogers. So you're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show, and I'm going to take a slight music break. And when we come back, I'm going to bring on my dear, dear friend, Amakiyasu Turbin House, and let her get started with this conversation. I tell you, she's going to bless you tonight, man. So just be prepared. All right, here we go. Quick music break, and then we'll be back and bring our speaker on for tonight. Thank you, guys.
It's like you're looking through a telescope. You see where you're going to be. Not the person they see. Can't be mad at the things you've been
All right, y'all know that was Mary. Mary, go get it. Go get your blessings. It's all right to crawl before you walk. It's okay to walk before you run. I tell you, that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. So look at here. Welcome back. Welcome back to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. We're so glad that you decided to join with us tonight. And we've got a fabulous, outstanding, just a super show planned for you. We're going to be talking about buried treasure, unearth your golden soul. And along with that, we're going to be talking about how healing can happen along your way, you know, planned or unplanned, that it just happens. And so our guest tonight is a newly published author, and I'm so excited for her, man. Her book is just absolutely outstanding, and she's a dear friend of mine. And I was trying to think of when we met. It was so many years ago, I don't think it really even matters, so we're not going to worry about that. But her name is Amakiyasu Turban House, and again, her book is Buried Treasure, Unearth Your Golden Soul. So we're into this last month. Can you believe that, of this year? So this is December, and we're going to be talking about family devotion and family tradition, and probably not in the traditional sense, because what we would like to do here at Life, Love, and Wellness is to change the projection of our families to something that really speaks to traditions that are wholesome and healing. And so this book and how it was put together and the reason why it was put together really kind of leads us in that direction. And so Amakiyasu, Kiyasu and her daughters actually are the creators of the book, and the son is, the biggest cheerleader of his females and his family. So just a family affair, you know, it's just really, really beautiful. And so I'm going to stop talking and bring on Amakiyasu and let her introduce herself and tell you a little bit about herself and the whole thesis behind the book, why it came together, the purpose of the book, and whatever you would like to share with us. We're all open ears, ma'am. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm so, so happy to be here and have this conversation with you. I'm very excited. I'm getting more and more excited about my book because of the response. The response has been overwhelmingly wonderful, and I'm so touched and moved by it. I don't really quite know how to handle it, you know. I mean, it's just that. Mm-hmm. It's just that beautiful and wonderful. So thank you for this opportunity. I want to start by describing to you, to everyone who's listening, this rock that I'm holding in my hand. You know, when I turn it on one side, all you can see is the rough, bumpy surface of the rock. Mm. It's, you know, I won't call it ugly because it's not ugly, but there's nothing sparkly or shiny or, you know, about it. It's a rough rock. It looks like something that if you were digging in your backyard, you might hit it and, you know, take it and toss it aside. But when I turn this rock over, I see that it has been broken into on the other side, and the inside of this rock is pure crystal.
Wow.
I mean, it's these beautiful crystals throughout the inner portion of the rock. And I'm telling you, you would never know it. Many of you have seen this, if you know anything about gemstones, that the crystal, you know, comes from the ground. It comes from a place of roughness. And so mm-hmm. it kind of represents to me, metaphorically, my book title and my book itself, because what I'm talking about in this book is the treasure within us, the power, the beauty, the supreme intelligence that lies within us. And, you know, it's so, sometimes we're so oblivious to it. We don't recognize it. We don't see it. But it's there. Yeah, it's in everyone. And this rock represents that. It's quite extraordinary. So I'm going to set it aside, but I wanted to describe that to you so that you get a sense of what we're about to talk about this evening in Buried Treasure, Unearth Your Golden Soul. I have, in the beginning of the book, I have several sort of precepts. And I want to just read them off to you because there are things that really helped me through a traumatic period, which I'll say a little more about in a minute. But these are the precepts. Number one, though sometimes impacted deeply by them, we are not our stories. And I just want to say that often our stories create such a powerful image that we are unable to shake the story. You know, the story that we carry or that we're telling ourselves becomes so strong that we don't even know how to separate from the story. And the story can be a hindrance to us. It can also be a help. But it can also be a hindrance. So we have to really be mindful of the story that we're telling ourselves, the story that we're creating about our lives. Number two, circumstances can change or do change continuously. So being a witness instead of an object of circumstance is a far better choice. So often we become tossed about by what's happening in our lives. And we kind of like lose, it's almost like we're unable to direct ourselves. So if we can become a witness and observe, we are less likely to be tossed about. And more likely to be able to see clearly. Circumstances can confuse us and lead us astray, you know, because they can be sometimes very difficult. And we get swept up in our circumstances. So learning how to step outside and look from the outside is a real, it's a skill, and it's an important one that we all need to develop the capacity to do. The next one is the universe is benevolent. The universe is benevolent. It has so much good for us. It is for us. It is for us. The good is infinite. And it is so vital that we tap into that. And that we recognize that. And again, it's sometimes, you know, we don't really, we're so caught up in our day-to-day that we are blind sometimes to the benevolence of the universe. So I encourage everyone to see the beauty, to see the wonder. You know, it's just, it's there for us. And number four. Number four. We create our reality with our thoughts. So, you know, I really had a hard time with this some years ago. I was like, no, we don't. You know, the reality is out there and we got to adjust. That was my, you know, my thinking. But I'm much more clear now that our thoughts are creating our reality. Our thoughts are creating our feelings. You know, what feelings are created largely by how we are thinking, how we are processing, how we are seeing mm-hmm. things. And how we see things and how we process our attitude, it creates, it does everything in our lives, you know, because it impacts how we interact with people, how we respond to various, you know, things going on. So the thoughts we hold, as I say later in my book, can be a blessing or a curse.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, our thoughts can bless us or curse us. So we have to be mindful. And this is all of this, you know, feeds into the instruction that meditation and quiet time are so important, because that's where we can go in and tap into our spirit. That mm-hmm. is pure. Everything else out there, there's no telling what you're going to be encountering, you know, in life and people and experiences. So quiet and meditation are essential. And then the last point is dependency on others for our happiness leads to trouble. Can I get an amen?
At least I was writing it down.
Yes. So, you know, sometimes we don't know that we're dependent on someone else for our happiness. We don't even recognize it. But when they go away or when the thing falls apart, and we realize how dependent we were upon that individual. So it's very important that we're all able to create and find our joy, our own joy, with or without any, you know, anyone. Not to say that people aren't important, because they're very important, but you don't ever want to hang or hinge yourself. You don't want your happiness and your joy to be hinged upon what someone else does or doesn't do, or someone else's presence in your life. We all need to be able to find our joy and live a joyful life because we are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number five. I'll sit with that for a minute.
Yeah, those are some powerful, powerful concepts.
Yeah. And all of these came out of, you know, they were revealed to me through the experience I was having, which was, I mean, you know, it seems so typical. It seems so typical, you know, a breakup, you know. But it was so shocking to me. It was not, you know, you can usually in a relationship, an intimate relationship, you know, it has an energy and you can determine how things are going. You know, you know whether, you know, it's kind of looking like it's not going to work out
mm-hmm.
or whether it's very strong and beautiful and on the way up and up, you know. And
mm-hmm.
this was a relationship that had what I thought was all the ingredients for complete and total success. Just harmony, capacity for communication, fun, similar desires. I mean, there were just so many things that made it beautiful. And suddenly, he was gone out of my life, and I was crushed. And part of being crushed was because it was my second marriage, and I felt like it was quite a change and that it was more of what I needed in a relationship. So for it to just kind of disappear without notice, okay, without notice, was just, put me in a place of complete and total devastation. I mean, we were building a life together, you know? we were building a life together, and I was, you know, looking forward to maybe we'll go to Belize, maybe we'll live in Panama, maybe let's visit Ghana, Senegal. We talked about these things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really discover or learn from him what was really going on until several years later. So I went through 2 or 3 years being in a complete state of like darkness, just,
wow,
you know, not understanding at all. And he mm-hmm. was not able to articulate why he left, which mm-hmm. was another puzzle to me. How can you not know, you know, why you're
right.
leaving a relationship?
Right.
But he didn't. He didn't. Or at least he couldn't get it. He couldn't access, couldn't get it out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I felt like I'd been thrown off a cliff. I felt like someone that I love threw me off a cliff.
Wow.
That's the deep thing.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it was just so painful. And it was hard for me to recover initially because I couldn't, you know, I couldn't understand it. I couldn't
yeah,
understand
right, right.
it. So in the throes of that kind of trauma, what I did know in my heart of hearts was that, well, two things. One, I could not allow what was happening to destroy me. That's
mm-hmm.
number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two was I had developed the belief as a very young person that even in the darkest moments, there's some good. Even in the greatest tragedy, there's some good. There's something good in this. There's got to be something good in this. That is the perspective that I had and that I have had earlier in my life when my mother passed. My mother passed when I was 18, and just suddenly, like, you know, like the relationship I was in. I mean, suddenly my mother was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 18. I had just started college. I had a 10-year-old little sister and an older brother and sister. And suddenly my mother was gone, and we were just, we were in a state of disbelief, you know?
Yeah.
Just a state
yeah.
of disbelief. Yeah. And so to be able to cope and survive that, I adopted the perspective that there must be good in this. There has to be. I had to believe that. And that belief carried me through. And, you know, I applied it to other things in my life. And when this took place, I certainly applied it here too. And I kept telling myself, there's something in this for you. There's something
mm-hmm.
in this for you. There's something in this for you. And I got my books. I stacked them up, you know, next to my bed, my spiritual texts that you know, that I love. And I began reading them. That's what saved me.
Okay.
It literally saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you talk about, you know, those two very devastating situations in your life, you know, your mom transitioning on to her next assignment when you were just 18, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, your second marriage, him disappearing without notice, and, you know, you said without warning on one and without
yeah.
notice on the other. But I would imagine that both of those appeared like a disappearance. You know, even though your mom was physically no longer with us, it's still, you know, it's like she disappeared from out of your life.
Yes.
And those are hard situations to comprehend, you know, because it has you, it may have a person that's going through that, you know, really questioning themselves as to, you know, like, why is that happening to my loved ones? You know, is it something that I'm contributing to, you know, to their actions? Did you go through any of that?
The question, particularly with the passing of my mother, I think the question of why was, you know, dominated initially. Why did this happen? Why would my mother, 49 years old, be taken, so beautiful, so loved, you know, and with four children? Why? And I don't think that I really resolved that question until later. I think I had to just drop it because I had no answer, except the answer that, well, there's good. But I couldn't be specific, you know? And I think now when I think about it, what I have to say about tragedy and great hardship is that we're not able to know why. You know, we're not able to know why, but we can know how. We can know how to move through it. We can know that, but no, the mystery. There are mysteries in life, and I think that's part of the beauty of life is the mystery. The unanswered questions, the big questions, like how is there an infinity? How is it that if you went out into space, you could just go on and on and on and on and on and on and on forever? There's no end. How that's just one of those mysteries, you know. It's so interesting and intriguing, and I think that there are things in life that cannot be specifically answered to a T. The answer for me was find the good. Find the good. Find the good.
Love it.
And
love it.
It doesn't reveal itself like all of a sudden, you know. It really is. It comes over time. It's not cut and dry as we might like.
right.
But it comes over time. I know that from my mother's passing, from the end of my first marriage, from the breakup of the second marriage, that I grew tremendously.
A bit.
That I am now more compassionate, that I'm more empathetic, that I'm stronger in my shoes, in my bones, you know? There are just things now that I would not have been had I not had those experiences. And I think I'm better for it.
Okay.
It wasn't easy, but I think I'm better for it.
Well, they say, you know, that growth can be a little tricky at times. And there was
growing pains, you know.
Exactly, right. And they're called pains for a reason. So,
yeah.
But when you come out on the plus on the other side, then it's all worth it. So, and you also made a statement about, because this was your second marriage, that it crushed you for him to have just disappeared without any notice.
Yeah.
So you obviously then had had some type of conversation in your head or in your heart or someplace, you know, weighing what you were putting out on the table, you know, for a second time in this marriage, and, you know, what you could gain or what you could lose. And so I don't really want to ask you specifically how that made you feel. I just wanted to throw that out there for people that's listening to your story. Because some people, you know, they just get married and get married and get married over and over and over again. But then there's others like yourself that are really looking at this as a commitment, like a true giving of yourself to this other person. And you're not doing it just to do it, but you're really putting a lot at stake in these relationships and these commitments to individuals. And so I honor that in you. And I just know that I feel you, even though this is now this is not my first time hearing your story. But each time you tell it, it's like I still feel it, like it's my first time hearing it. So, because, you know, you tell it so beautifully, and it's such an important part of what we go through day in and day out. You know, we're going to have some losses, we're going to have some wins, and how do you deal with it? And so you're just addressing it so wonderfully. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm doing the best I can.
you're doing a great job.
I just wanted, one of the main things for me in an intimate relationship has always been the idea that together, that with this person, I'm better and I am closer to God. That this person, that the union is, you know, creating a more beautiful manifestation of who I am and who he is together, and that we and that we therefore can glorify God, can, you know, manifest our godness you know, in ways that we couldn't if we were separate. So I always was looking for the potential for that kind of beautiful union that was, you know, just grounded in divinity. So that's, you know, that just adds to the devastation, you know, and the feeling of, wow, how could this happen? And that, and there's the question that was part of what I kept asking myself initially was, how could this have happened? What did I do? The first thing you do is you look at yourself, you know, like, what did I do? What was I doing wrong? How could, you know? How could I be blind not to see that this could happen?
Right.
So just to kind of uncover some of the mystery, I want to say that a big part of the problem, or reason, I should say, the reason for my husband's departure was that my youngest child, who was a young teenager, had a hard time adjusting to him. And although she never was rude or disrespectful or mean, she was, she was sad, you know. She was, and there was just this dark, I describe it as a dark cloud hanging over us, the whole house, all the time. And I think we all kind of adjusted to it. But it wasn't something that you really want. You don't want that vibe, you know?
Right.
And my husband, I think it wore on him more than I realized. It really wore on him. And I just didn't I didn't know that he was, you know, he's such a positive person. He's a very positive mm-hmm. person. And mm-hmm. I never saw it, you know, like they say, I never saw it coming. Like I got hit upside the head with a baseball that I didn't know was coming. Because there wasn't any indication that he was unhappy or feeling bad. And that kind of dovetails into this other area of how people how people sometimes suppress their feelings. You know, you talk about family and family relations.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we suppress our feelings because we're afraid to feel ourselves.
Oof.
We're afraid to reveal what we because we are afraid to feel what we feel. And if we show it, then everybody else is going to know it and be impacted by it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the things I recall in my first marriage is when we decided to break up, I thought I was, you know, smart. I thought I was educated and smart because I went to school to teach. I was a teacher. And I did child psychology, so I always had a great love for children and a great interest in children and their development and growth. However, in my personal life, with this, you know, breakup of the marriage, instead of taking the time to, you know, encourage my children to talk about what they were feeling, to express ask questions, whatever, I kind of pretended like everything was great. I took on this thing of, oh, this is the best thing that could have happened, you know. And I did feel like it was the best thing. But I ignored their side of things, you know. And that was very, and see, so I pushed that away. And by doing that, it disallowed them the opportunity to express themselves. And that created a whole thing, particularly for my youngest child.
Mm-hmm.
She has had trouble ever since. She was the most outgoing, most effervescent of my three children. From the age of, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, she was amazing. But that breakup and the way I handled it, which was, you know, what she said to me later, much later on, she said, nobody was talking about it.
Mm.
And so it was like she read the cues. To her, what that meant was, it's not okay to talk about it.
Right, right.
We can't talk about it. So, I mean, I'm going deep here. I'm going deep, but I'm going deep because there are subtleties in, in our family relationships, in our relationship
mm-hmm.
period,
mm-hmm.
that we, you know, sometimes we feel like we're doing the right thing, but we really have to check ourselves. And it's
right.
not, you know. It doesn't come automatically or easily all the time. So that's one of the things that I would like to have done better. I tell you, I would love to have done better.
And before you leave that, because I think a lot of us, I know I've done it, and I believe I know some other folks that have done it, by not allowing children to express their feelings or their emotions, we're actually teaching them to suppress those feelings.
Exactly.
Yeah, and
that's exactly
that right
it.
There is like is deep, because then that could lead to some mental health issues later in life as a person is trying to deal with some grown-up things, they think. But
yes,
they still have this
yes.
childhood trauma that's wearing them out, you know?
It's wearing them out, wearing them out.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's
that
deep
was,
right there.
That was part of my husband's issue, is
mm-hmm.
his childhood trauma was caused him to be unable to access what he was feeling, to be clear
mm.
about what he was feeling,
wow.
and to express
wow.
it because of his own trauma. And so he
mm.
was, he suppressed it. His way of leaving was a suppressed man, in a suppressed manner, couldn't tell me about it, couldn't talk to me about it. And the other thing that happens with that is that you're almost creating a prison in which you live.
Mm-hmm. And he witnessed. He saw your daughter going through that.
Yeah. Yeah, but he didn't make the association.
Right,
you know,
right.
He didn't make that association. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes
wow.
as we sweep things under the rug, it feels good because we don't have to see it. But it is it's festering, it's becoming
yeah.
a tangle, it's becoming a mess, and when you lift
mm-hmm.
that bug up, it ain't pretty.
Mhm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that's interpersonal relations and family relations have a great impact on how we function later in life and are
right.
very, very important. Very important. It takes a lot of courage, you know, to face yourself, to be yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And parents sometimes think they're protecting their children. And sometimes parents want to control, you know, things as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right,
you
right.
know, there are a lot of dynamics that can go on that can do us harm, you know, unfortunately. And this book is all about ways of healing and seeing ourselves for who we really are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that right there with those suppressed feelings and not allowing themselves. That's so deep.
Exactly.
I'm trying to move past it, but you know.
Well, we can stay with it for a minute because part of what happens, particularly with us as African Americans, is that we are, as parents, we are so, we want so much for our children to, number one, to be all right, just to be all
yeah.
right.
Right.
And number two, to be successful, to overcome some of the challenges of our ancestors, of our, you know, forefathers and foremothers, to overcome. And we don't always approach it in the way that's healthiest, you know. Sometimes we approach it with a little too much sternness, a little too much rigidity, you know,
mm-hmm.
because we think that without those structures and without the firmness and the rich, so some kind of a rigid guideline, we think that they'll fall by the wayside or they won't do right. Yeah. And that's not, you know, that's not necessarily so. It's not necessarily
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
one of the things we need more than anything is faith and trust in the natural mm-hmm. human process of growth and development. You know, I think our educational system has erred greatly by overstructuring, you know, the classroom environment, the educational scene, because we don't give children enough space, you know. We don't give them mm-hmm. enough room to imagine, to be creative. You know what I mean? And we're so busy trying to fit them into this
box,
narrow space. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's freedom. That's the buried treasure too.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
That authentic self is the buried treasure. Ooh. Okay.
Yes. Yes. It's buried, and you know, some of the folks in charge are keeping it buried. You know, they're
mm-hmm.
covering up the light, putting that bushel
mm-hmm.
over the light.
Yeah. That's a good perspective to keep in mind. So, yeah. Thank you for that. I mean, seriously, thank you from the depths of my heart. That right there was just a conversation I believe that we all will benefit from, because we have our own issues that we've suppressed, and, you know, we're not able to, depending on what, you know, time period you came up through, children
mm-hmm.
were,
yes.
You know, not expected to have a voice or have anything worth listening to. And so, you know, even if you did have an opinion about something, current affairs or the like, you know, you were better seen than heard. And I forget exactly. Children should be seen and not heard, I think was how it was said. You know, so you couldn't, you did not have the freedom to voice your opinion or add your comments to a grown-up's conversation anyway. So just throwing that out too, you know. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Again, thanks. So. All right, so we want to get back to your groundwork for the book and how you got it organized and put together, or you want to stay on this level. It either one works for me.
Well, I'll read some of the quotations, and because they're all, you know, the reason why I wrote the book was after I had been taking notes in my grief, taking notes to try to help myself, and then I reviewed all the notes, and I was like, oh my God, this is so wonderful. These notes, these concepts, these principles are so wonderful. I've got to put them down in a way that, you know, where I can keep them. And then the idea of the book came, and it was just on, you know.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For example, this one, for a star to be born, a gaseous nebula must collapse. So collapse, crumble. This is not your destruction. This is your birth. So, you know, what feels like destruction when everything around you is falling apart is not really destruction. It is an opportunity for you to become, to be reborn, essentially.
Mm.
To be reborn, to create a new self. And, you know, in the midst of it, it doesn't feel like that. It doesn't. But it's good. If you have this in your consciousness, it can help you through it. It can help you through it.
Mm-hmm.
And they say when one door closes, another one opens. So what looks like the end is really a new beginning.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and you told us earlier, we create our reality with our thoughts. And so that's just
yes.
a shift in and focus as to where you want to put your attention. So, yes, ma'am.
Yes. Yes. Your joy and your happiness heal you.
Mm.
This is really important because, you know, a lot of times we think that joy is it's like a goal. It's down the road. We're going to get there when we get that degree or when we get that spouse or when we get that house. Then we'll have joy. But it's the opposite is true. The joy in your spirit is what will bring all good things to you. The joy in your spirit is what will magnetize all the best of life.
Mm-hmm.
Joy is like that. Joy is a magnet for good things. So, you know, you don't want to wait for joy or you don't want to think that joy is a result of, you know, oh, I accomplished this and oh, I accomplished that. Not to say that you shouldn't be happy, but your joy is really the thing. It's a vibration. Joy is a vibration, and the vibration that you carry is the vibration that you attract.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mhm.
So we live very much in a world of I would say external reference, like, you know, what we do, our doing is so important to us, our doing, we're always doing. We don't have much time to just be.
Mm-hmm.
And that doing, it often, you know, it distracts us and takes us away from the heart of who we are. We need to know the heart of who we are. It's very, when we can be who we are, we're the best, you know.
Right.
We can really be who we are. Joy is an inside job. And, you know, it's on us to tap into it and be aware of when we're robbing ourselves of our joy.
Wow. No one will willingly accept that they're doing that. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, no, not me. I know that would be my first response.
Exactly.
Well, we can do it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Let me read this. This is so in my book, the quotations are on the left-hand side of the page, and on the right-hand side are my commentaries. So I don't know if I'll read all of this, but I want to read at least the first couple of paragraphs that are response to the statement, your joy and your happiness heal you. So this is what I said. Joy is our natural state.
Mm-hmm.
We are born blissful, naturally at peace, and as infants, delight in small and simple things, what happens? Where does it go? To various degrees, our external environment and the inclinations we come here with hold sway over us. Unwittingly, we are influenced, persuaded, and cajoled into a range of mindsets wide as the sea. So somehow, that pure bliss, that pure peace and delight that we are born with, they kind of dissipate with the introduction of so much in the world around us, our home life, our family life, or, you know, and we begin to lose our joy. You know, I hate to go back there, but, you know, that slap on the hand and another slap on the hand about what you can't do and don't do. You see, it's okay to let a child know what he or she can't do. You have to. But you also want to encourage, you know, you got to kind of balance it.
Right,
you know,
right.
You got to balance it. You say, no, you know, don't, you can't touch that. That's dangerous, or come over here. And then you want to give them something wonderful to engage in, you know, whether it's blocks or some other little, some Play-Doh or pots and pans or something that will engage them. Often children get into trouble because they are curious and active.
For sure.
Which is good, which is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to have constructive things to engage with. And so we want to be careful not to slap and say no, you know, 50 times more than we're saying yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, look at this. Yes, isn't this fun? Oh, come and get up here with me and help me cook. You know, give that child a piece of dough. Give that child a stick of celery. You know what I mean? Just, it's simple things, really.
Yes, yes. Balance it out. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes, yes. And so in the next paragraph I say, as long-term relationships go, we often find ourselves codependent, each leaning on the other for one thing or another. Our frailties masked, highlighted, or fed. In addition, societal standards influence us unconsciously. We may think we know what we want when really we are parroting the dictates of an invisible monolith.
Mm.
See, this is, you know, the mind is, it's deep. It's deep stuff. You know, we think we know our minds. We think we know what we want, but sometimes what we want is what's been placed before us. That television is seriously influential and has got subliminal things going on. You know, the thing,
right?
You know how they, you know, the pharmaceutical, the drugs and everything, the advertisements for the drugs. You know, they'll be telling you all the dangers of the drugs. And in the scene, however, the family, the couple, the children, the parents, they're just dancing in the tulips. It's just so beautiful, you know. And we that's the kind of influence under when we engage in society. You know, some of us, you know, we may not even allow our children to watch TV for the first 6-7 years of their lives. You know, that's very rare these days. But
right.
I know I tried for a while, you know, because you know that there's more going on than meets the eye. You know, we live in a culture where beauty is the white standard. So you got the white women with the long flowing hair, and that becomes the standard, you know. So there are things like that that are influencing affecting us that we are just not, you know, conscious of on a daily.
Yeah, you know, you were talking about those, the pharmaceutical companies and the commercials. And just pay attention, you guys, if you've not done that in the past. Like they'll tell you that this medication that they're telling you to go to your doctor and ask them to write you a prescription for, they're telling you it's going to kill you or your tongue is going to swell up. That's going to kill you because you can't breathe, you can't swallow, you know, or it may cause your limbs to fall off, all kind of things, right? And but like Amakafa was saying, you know, but they're walking along the beach, you know, skipping and enjoying this clear blue water and the sand. And so you don't even hear the words, but your subconscious hears the words. So just pay attention the next time.
Yes.
And maybe
yes.
You will turn the TV off.
Right. It's something we all, you know, maybe once or twice a year, take a fast from television. Yeah.
And
you'd
Facebook.
Be surprised that, yes, all that. Yeah, because our soul needs to be nourished, you know?
Yes.
Our souls need to be nourished. Otherwise, they shrivel up. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to read a couple more.
Okay.
This is so basic, you know. This one is simply says, judgment is a burden. Free yourself. Let it go. We were having this conversation the other day at the book launch when we were talking about judgment. We're going to judge things. We're going to evaluate things. But the judgment I'm talking about is the critical judgment. It's the negative judgment that sometimes we get caught up in because we have a need to be right.
Yes.
You know, and sometimes what we're feeling is it's not bad, you know. We're really trying to be good. But in the process, we are negating others. So when we negate others and become driven by that, it dominates us. So we're in, again, that prison, you know. You tie yourself up in your own prison of judgment, and you can get easily in a swirl of negativity by constantly finding fault with everything and everyone. We have to get to a place where we can love people unconditionally.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that we're putting a stamp of approval on everything that everyone does. That's not what we're doing. You can love someone with all their mess. You know, we got to love ourselves, and we know we are not all righteous and good. We all have our stuff, you know. It's very important to love ourselves and love one another. It's so much more relaxing when you love people, you know.
It is, truly.
Yeah, having negative judgment continuously is actually quite stressful.
Mhm.
Yeah, it creates a lot of stress.
Right. Taking it right out of you. We got about 15 minutes left in the show.
Okay.
We want to leave a few minutes in case someone has a question or want to make a comment also. So.
Okay. So what I said about judgment is our well-meaning thoughts, sometimes held in self-righteousness, often place us in our very own self-constructed prison. being mad at this one or that one creates walls and blockages. Who are you holding hostage due to some infraction against you or a loved one? Who are you looking down upon, and toward whom do you have an unfavorable fixed opinion? Even the slightest judgment can create toxicity in the spirit, like the flash of resentment toward that driver who cut in front of you on the freeway and the choice words you muttered in the privacy of your car. Pent-up anger, long-standing or otherwise, can cause these hot flashes throughout the day. They are indicators of our inner climate. Be at peace and do all you can to free yourself of the judgment game. It takes a lot of energy and drags us down. Yeah.
But that was a vivid picture.
If you
picture.
Have unfinished, go, say that again.
I said that was a vivid picture. Hot flashes equal pent up anger.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And a lot of times, the more hot flashes you have, or the more sort of quick-tempered things that go on with you, the more anger and toxicity you have going on in your spirit. They're indicators. They're definitely indicators.
Yeah. Quite interesting.
Yes. So I say, if you have unfinished business with someone, consider having a construct non-accusatory conversation to clear the air. That's the 1%. And you might need a neutral mediator. Free the other 99% without a conversation. Just let them go.
Yes.
You'll feel lighter. You'll feel lighter. You might even sprout wings.
Love it. Well, I want to ask real quick if anyone has any comments for Amakit Asu, please hit one on your dial. Our call-in number is 516-531-9819. Now, she does have some additional gems that she would like to drop, and I'm speaking for her right now because we're in separate locations. But if you do have something you would like to say, now would be the time. And I'm going to allow her to keep going because we are running down on the time. So you can go right ahead with your presentation, my dear.
Okay. All right. This one is from a book called The I Am Discourses. The I Am Discourses is a book that was basically channeled. It's a very interesting book and very, very powerful. This quote comes from that book. It says, and it's very simple and straightforward, unless we expect, accept, and rejoice presence of the thing we want, how in the name of God can we expect to have it?
Read that again.
So, yes, unless we expect, accept and rejoice in the presence of the thing we want, how in the name of God can we expect to have it? In other words, we are more likely to attract that which we want when we are eagerly anticipating it, when we are knowing in our spirit that it's here, that it's ours, it's on the way, that, you know, there's no that whole thing of, well, no, I can't have that yet because I didn't do this and I didn't do that, or it'll be 10 years before I get there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get in that spirit of seeing it, believing it, knowing it in our spirit now.
Now.
Before it shows up. Before it shows up. We give thanks and praise before the good show up. It's really, it's a vibration. It's an energy, you know, that you carry, that you have, and that will attract. See, the thing that's going to get you to where you want to go is a whole, an array of experiences and people. And you have to have a certain vibration and a certain energy to attract those. So that expectation and acceptance and rejoicing before it even shows up is what's going to help bring it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Love it.
Yes.
That positive flow again, positive energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
And often what takes us out of that positive mindset is that we're thinking about we're thinking about what our blockages or our stumbling blocks or what reasons that we can't get there. You know, we're,
mm-hmm.
and we're creating
mm-hmm.
these things.
Yes.
In our mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the mind
on the rough side of that rock you was telling us about in the very beginning.
Yes.
That rough, bumpy side.
Right. We think that's all there is, you know?
Exactly.
We think that's all there is. And we're standing right on top of that beautiful, beautiful crystal right beneath our feet.
Yes.
So I mentioned that I was a teacher most of my life, and this quote kind of connects to that, and my explanation definitely is a part of that. And so what it says is, let go of what you know by sight or convention, and let the presence enter.
Mm.
Let go of what you know, and let the presence enter. That's a capital P on presence.
Yeah.
So I say here, if I have time, I hope. My greatest desire as a teacher, okay. My greatest desire as a teacher of 30 years was to inspire children and make them feel good about themselves. Inspired teaching was my best teaching, and it was often spontaneous and unplanned. I'm telling you, I was a mess. You know, I didn't fit in that straitjacket.
Right.
In retrospect, I know now that I was allowing the presence to enter. This became the hallmark of my teaching experience. In the early morning, just after opening my eyes, but before the requirements of the day took hold of my mind, I was often flooded with an idea. I mean, a deluge. The idea would be so exciting that I would nearly jump out of bed and rush to school to get things set up. One time, I scurried around the house collecting items, a cowboy hat, a pair of boots, a small paintbrush. When I arrived at school and the students were settling in, I quickly exited and re-entered the room looking like an archaeologist and pretended to be on a rough bus ride. Out of breath, I almost missed the invisible bus. I plopped down in a chair facing sideways in front of the class. Speaking out loud with a southern drawl, I shared my excitement to be on my first archaeological dig. As the bus bounced along, I held my hat and dreamed out loud about the findings the team and I would make. I had their attention. I had their attention. A few days later, my students arrived to find a grid taped to the floor and a sandbox nearby full of labeled artifacts to be placed on the grid. The lessons that sprung from this one idea were many. They were interdisciplinary, fun, and engaging. Fortunately, I often had the freedom to execute my wild ideas. Had I been tied to the structures generally imposed upon teachers, I'm sure my students would have missed many rich and wonderful experiences, including the classroom that became a beach, the homeschool basement that held scientific experiments in physics, landforms, and precipitation, and all the plays, the funny, heartwarming one that sprung from a lively folk tale, or the pirate's play, prompted by a ship-like play structure in the woods. I take no credit. It was the presence that took hold of me, and I gave it my trust. Welcome the invisible forces working on your behalf. I tell you, my teaching experience, these that I read here, I mean, that's really what I did. I left the presence. I just went with the flow, you know.
Right, right.
Not really knowing where it would go. But trusting that, yes. Trusting that it would go somewhere good.
Yes, the beauty in it. Yeah. When you're not, because you said it earlier, you know, when you're not trying to control the situation and you're allowing it to just unfold. So we're looking at about 4 minutes. Why don't you close us out? Tell us where the book can be purchased and any other perhaps closing idea you want to put around the book so that everyone will go out and purchase it. Tell them where it can be purchased, you know, how to get it, and any other closing thoughts you would like. And you have just been so fascinating. Man, I wish we had about another more hour, but it's been such a good experience. And you guys, she just launched her book on Sunday. And she's with us tonight, and then she's going to North Carolina over the weekend. So she's really, really blessing the world with this work. And so I really would ask that you support her project and purchase her book. And I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Yes. So my book is available on Amazon. It's $13.99. It's available on Barnes & Noble as well, and Balboa Press. Balboa Press is the publisher of the book. So I'd like to close with this quote, which is this. I wish I could show you when you are lonely or in darkness the astonishing light of your own being. That's by Hafiz.
Beautiful. Absolutely.
Yeah. We all are bright, bright lights, and all we have to do is uncover it.
Yes.
Uncover it. And this book, Praise God, can help to uncover that light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's buried treasure. Unearth your golden soul. And
that's
her
it.
Name is spelled AmaKiasu.
Yes.
AmaKiasu. And the last name is Turpin, Turpin House, House. And that's on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and Balboa Press. $13.99, did you say?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a great book, and you will really, really appreciate all the nuggets. And it's well written, is quick and straight to the point. it's beautiful for gifts for the holidays that are coming up. And take a peek, make your purchases, and let's support our guests. And you have just been absolutely wonderful, and we certainly appreciate you taking time out of your busy, busy schedule, and we just bless you as you go forth and sharing the words of your book and the compassion that you have for humanity in your heart. We just absolutely love you, and thank you so much for being with us this evening. Anything else you would like to share with us?
Thank you. Just know, everyone, know that you have truly got the power. You have the power and the light. It's all there. Everything you need is within you.
Yes. Within, within. Thank you, everybody. And we'll be around next week, same time, same channel. And I'm actually speaking on reversing chronic diseases next week. So make sure you plug into us. And thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about life, it's all about love, and it's all about wellness. So remain blessed, stay safe, and you guys take care. And we'll see you next week. Good night.
Thank you.
And I'm a-